Revelation chapter 13, we'll look at something here related to the global beast once again. I've entitled this lesson, Miracles of the Beast. And I want for us to understand and notice here some statements in relation to what Satan uses to deceive people into following the global beast. Revelation 13, notice verse 11, we have now the second beast that's mentioned in this passage. Of course, verse 1 talks about the beast from the sea, of the sea, and that's the sea of humanity. Notice it says here in verse 11, I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. Now, the other one is the political beast, the first one that we've seen, and now verse 11 and following is the religious beast. And it says, again, notice this description. He had two horns like a lamb and spake as a dragon. He exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. And again, as we think about the Roman Empire and then, you know, Rome, Roman Catholic Church and all those things, I believe that's all interrelated with this. Verse 13, he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. He had power to give life unto the image of the beast, and that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Notice again the emphasis in verse 13 and 14. That's where I'm focusing our thoughts here today. Verse 13, it says, he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So notice here these miracles. That's what we're emphasizing here today. As you think about the Roman Catholic Church, they have miracles, supposed miracles. Every Mass, celebration of the Mass, they have an apparent miracle. When the priest says hocus pocus and the wafer becomes the actual body of Christ, supposedly. Suppose that's a supposed miracle, which is not true. But what I also think is interesting, is I've noticed this from time to time, is that the word of faith is actually tied into the Roman Catholic Church. And in fact, one of the meetings with Hagen, years ago, the Pope actually made a presentation by way of video or something at their meeting. So that's kind of interesting. Also, Benny Hinn has been known to be in Rome and some various things like that. And so the Word of Faith movement and the Roman Catholic Church, all that's tied together. And notice here the emphasis on that is deception in verse 14. Deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. Now, as far as deception and what we're talking about as far as delusion, notice with me 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. This is the statement that I'm emphasizing some of this as far as the miracles of the beast and strong delusion. As we think about the Roman Empire and you know, Papal Rome and all that kind of stuff, I believe there's a deception that takes place so that people will follow after the beast, this global beast that we've been emphasizing. It says here in let's start with verse 8. And then shall that wicked, capital W, wicked, be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So obviously, the Antichrist is not 2,000 years old, so obviously we're talking about somebody different than just in the last 7 years of, you know, before the coming of the Lord. Because he's going to continue until his coming. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. Notice again this, lying wonders, pseudo wonders. It's literally what that's talking about, false wonders. With all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. For this cause God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned or judged, condemned, who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Notice the very strong statements there, that God will send them strong delusion. Notice God who sends this strong delusion upon them. So let me give you the definition of delusion, the act of deluding, deception. a misleading of the mind, false representation, illusion, error or mistake proceeding from false views. Notice this strong delusion that God sends on those because they do not have a love of the truth. Something else that related to this term delusion, the strong delusion, it's something which one accepts as true or real, but which is actually false or unreal. I want you to listen carefully to that definition again. The strong delusion, we're talking about something which one accepts as true or real, but which is actually false or unreal. Now, as far as this deception, this strong delusion, notice the reason why, again, it comes to them in verse 10. Because they received not the love of the truth that they might be saved. So if somebody were to ask me, what is my strength? I would say that I have a love to know the truth. And I don't claim to be extra wise. None of that. My strength, personally, would be that I have a love to know the truth. Think about this. Biblically and historically. I've told you, I've had to change all kinds of different things of what I was taught in Bible college because as I'm studying the truth, it doesn't match up with what I was taught in Bible college. But I have a love for the truth. Biblically, I want to know what this book says. Also, historically. I want you to think about the fact that this statement that's made here as far as the strong delusion, that is not just for the seven-year tribulation period, as it's commonly called. Here's what I believe this passage is teaching us in 2 Thessalonians 2. God eventually gives people over to their belief system. Did you hear what I just said? God eventually gives people over to their belief system so that they cannot and will not hear anything contrary to what they believe is the truth. As I've been saying, excuse me, from time to time now, ever since I saw this in Brother First's book, people do not necessarily want to know the truth, but they want to be assured that what they believe is the truth. That's a powerful statement. We don't necessarily want, for the most part in modern-day Christianity, we don't necessarily want to know the truth, but I want to make sure what I believe is the truth. I want assurances of that, so I'm going to have these teachers that will assure me that what I believe is the truth. That's where we are in modern-day Christianity. Notice John chapter 12. I want you to notice here this outworking of God sending strong delusion. In fact, there were many Jews who could not believe at the time of Christ. They would not believe. So because they would not believe and understand that Jesus was indeed the Messiah, they could not believe. Those two things go together. Notice it says here, John 12, verse 37. But though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him. How many miracles do you have to prove? You use to prove who you are. Master, we would see a sign from thee. How many signs had they already seen? It wasn't because they wanted to see a sign. It's because they were refusing to believe. Notice, verse 38, that the saying of Isaiah the prophet, might be fulfilled, which he spake, Lord, who hath believed our report? To whom hath the Lord, the arm of the Lord been revealed? Notice this statement again. Therefore, they could not believe. Because that Isaiah said again, he hath blinded their eyes and hardened their heart that they should not see with their eyes nor understand with their heart and be converted and should heal them. Because they refused to believe in Jesus as the Messiah, they could not believe. Why? Because God is sending a strong delusion upon them. Notice to me, Isaiah 59. There's a couple of passages in particular that are very interesting in relation to this strong delusion that God sends on someone who refuses to believe. And in fact, as a pastor, I've seen this over the years. Some people refuse to believe so much that it doesn't matter how much truth you present to them. It doesn't matter how many passages you take to them to. They will not see it because they don't want to see it. That's the key. That's the strong delusion that God sends upon them. Isaiah 59, verse 14. Judgment is turned away backward and justice standeth afar off. For truth is fallen to the street, equity cannot enter. Notice, because truth has fallen in the street, equity cannot enter. We don't have equity in our courts today because we have a refusal to believe in the truth today. Verse 15, yea, truth faileth. That is a powerful statement. Truth faileth. And he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey, and the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Also chapter 66, Isaiah chapter 66. It's very interesting as we see the application of John 12. Isaiah 66, notice verses 1 through 4. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. And to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. He that killeth an ox is as if he slew a man. No distinction, I believe, is what that's talking about. How many times have we heard, we've got to save the whales, but we aren't saving unborn children.
Right.
I believe that's a powerful application of this. He that sacrifices a lamb as if he cut off a dog's neck. These are powerful illustrations that he's given here. He that offereth an oblation as if he offered swine's blood, something that was forbidden to Old Testament Israel. He that burneth incense as if he blessed an idol. Notice this. Yea, they have chosen their own ways. Notice that. They have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abominations. That sounds like America. We're delighting in our abominations. I don't know if I've not seen what they're doing with this, but they're talking about expanding out Gay Pride Month to Gay Pride Summer. Why? Because they want it to be total domination of our culture. But notice here, because they delight in their abominations, I also will choose their delusions. God is the one who chooses the delusions, not they themselves. They choose their own ways. They have chosen their own ways, verse 3, but they're not able to choose their own delusions. I will also choose their delusions and will bring their fears upon them, because when I called, none did answer. When I spake, they did not hear. But they did evil before mine eyes and chose that in which I delighted not. I believe this is similar to what Romans 1 says. God gave them up. God gave them over to their unbelief and their wickedness. George Orwell is quoted as saying, in an age of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Did you hear that? In an age of universal deceit, common deceit around the world, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. How many times preachers tell the truth and preach what the Bible says and they're in trouble for it? That's the day in which we live. Now, it's very interesting, in a contrast to this, Luke 24, verses 44 and 45, we've seen it several times over the last several months. It says that the Lord opened their understanding that they might understand the Scriptures. I want to give you one key as to why I believe this delusion is so strong in our modern culture. One key to our delusion is this. The average American, this is as of 2018 according to MIT Technology Review, January 23, 2018, the average American watches 36 hours of TV programming. I thought that was a very powerful word. Programming. They're programming the way we think. Or streaming every week. 36 hours. Almost like a full-time job. 20 hours watching videos and surfing the internet. 56 hours. So then you have work. I mean, that's the average American. I know. A lot of times that, somebody, they want noise, background noise, and so they'll turn the TV on. And I mean, they go to sleep with the TV on. They live with the TV on. I mean, constant things. That's, I believe, one of the keys to the strong delusion. And another definition of strong delusion is a false belief, a fixed misconception. Strong delusion. Notice the Bible calls it strong delusion. I want to give you an example from recent history. I know I'm going to be criticized for this, conspiracy theory, but anyway. I don't have a problem with that. Where's my tinfoil hat? No. I was 4 years old when America and the world was told that we landed men on the moon. It was reinforced in my public school education that in 1969, we landed men on the moon. Well, several years ago, I was listening to a sermon by a Baptist preacher in Florida. I used to download his sermons and listen to them. And I was listening to this sermon, and just in passing, he used an illustration. Well, I don't remember what he was preaching about. I just remember the illustration now. But in passing, he questioned the moon landing by NASA. And the one example I remember him mentioning was how clear the voices of the astronauts were on the moon in comparison to, cell technology and even stuff today. I remember years, I want to watch TV, so I don't know if this commercial or something related to it is even on TV anymore. It's not woke enough probably, but the TV commercial is The man walking around a skyscraper, right? You probably remember this. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? I mean, he's walking around the... Can you hear me now? And of course, it was talking about dropped cell signals and all that kind of stuff. So that's a modern-day thing. We have phone calls, you know, cell calls drop or whatever. With modern technology, 50 years later. But in 1969, long before our current satellite technology, someone on a phone conversation from the moon said, one small snack for man. We could hear it so clearly. It was amazing technology they had in 1969. So they must have had cell towers on the moon. I don't know. I did some research on this. And I'm not telling you whether or not you should think that the moon landing actually took place or whatever. I want to give you some food for thought, though. Because I'm using this to illustrate how easily we can believe something that may not be true. I watched a video entitled, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. If you want to do a 1 gigabyte download, you can watch it on archive.org, I think it was where I found it. But a funny thing happened on the way to the moon. The millionaire who funded the project was a board member of an aerospace company that built rockets for NASA. The one who funded this movie, countering the moon landings, he knew the rockets used did not have enough fuel and power to leave Earth's orbit. So here's this millionaire funding a video, movie, funny thing happened on the way to the moon, that actually dispels the idea that we were on the moon. I read a book entitled Moon Man, the true story of a filmmaker on the CIA hit list. I don't know if you've heard of that book. You may have heard of the name Bart Sabrell before. Bart Sabrell is the one who wrote that book. Also, another man that I saw a little bit of some writings on and stuff was Bill Kaysing. Bill Kaysing believed very strongly that we never went to the moon. So who is Bill Kaysing? He was an engineer for Rocketdyne in California. He worked for NASA. He had government clearance as a contractor. And he said, we never went to the moon. He passed high-level security status and all that with NASA. And he said very clearly, we never went to the moon. Notice to me, Psalm 115. I want to show you a Bible reason why we never went to the moon. So you can call me a conspiracy theorist, or you can say I'm a biblicist because of this verse right here. Notice Psalm 115, verse 16. The heaven, even the heavens, are the Lord's. But the earth hath he given to the children of men. Heavens, the heaven of heavens, belongs to God. But he's given to the earth to the children of men. Just an example of this, in 1990, I think it was, they talked about the fact that they found this rock in Antarctica. They found this rock that came from Mars. It came from Mars millions of years ago. I think it was like 17 million years ago. This rock left Mars, and they found it under the ice in Antarctica. Well, then a few weeks later, someone related to the Mars landings and all that kind of stuff they were doing with all the technology and everything, they said they found where this rock came from 17 million years ago. That's the kind of stuff that we're being sold today. There's journalists that I came across more than once. I found the statement. Journalists who call or say that NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer. NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer. That's what journalists believe. I want you to think about how this fits in with the global beast that we've been studying. Miracles to support the fact that he needs to be worshipped, this global beast. I'm going to just give you a little bit of evidence that I came across. This is not thorough. This is the kind of stuff I do in my spare time. Think about this photo evidence, first of all. When you look at all of the photos of NASA, there's one major thing missing. There are no stars in the photos of supposed moon landings. Stars are gone. There's no stars in the expanse of heaven in all those photos. So they say that there's a condition that astronauts have. NASA astronauts have a condition called star blindness. They don't ever see stars. Only two dozen of one of the greatest events in history. There's only two dozen photos of Apollo 11 astronauts on the moon. Only two dozen. And this is the biggest event in history. There are no still pictures of Neil Armstrong on the surface of the moon. In fact, as I was doing some reading on this, even NASA was surprised and shocked at that. The first one to step out on the moon, there's no still photos of him. Also, it's very interesting when you look at some of the photos of the moon landing, of the moon walking and so on, shadows are cast in different directions. Think about something with me. If we're standing out in the sun, two of us are standing side by side, are the shadows going to go in different directions? When you look carefully at some of these photos, there's shadows cast one direction from the modules, and another photo shows an astronaut's shadow going in a different direction. How is that possible when it's the same light source? See, that's the key. It wasn't the same light source. It's two lights, two different light. Also, what's very interesting, light reflections in one of the visors I saw. There's a photo. In fact, this is a cover book of one man's book. But there's light reflections in the visors of the astronaut's helmet. When you look carefully at it, first of all, it shows the other astronaut that's supposedly taking the picture. Well, one hand is down at his side, and the other hand is not taking a picture. How did they take that picture? Oh, it must have been somebody else other than the astronaut. Oh, wait a minute. I thought there were only two people on the moon, walking on the moon. Also, it's very interesting. This is hilarious, actually. There's a rock in one of the Apollo 16 photos that has a capital C on it. Oh, God must be labeling all his created rocks on the moon, right? No, that was a photo prop. There would not be a capital C on it if God created it. This is also a hilarious photo. John Young, Apollo 16 photo, has no shadow. It shows him jumping a little bit off the ground, but he has no shadow. How does he not have a shadow? That's because he was superimposed on a picture. He was superimposed into the photo. Oh, that's the photo evidence. What about the film coverage of the event? An unedited copy of NASA film was mistakenly, possibly not, sent out by a person at NASA. Bart Sobrell had requested unedited videos of the NASA flight and flights and so on, and he was constantly refused. Well, then all of a sudden he realized he actually had a video what he was looking for. Well, it was sent out by a person at NASA, and as he's watching this video, not realizing he even had it in his possession at that time, there's this disclaimer at the beginning of the video. All right, so listen to this disclaimer. This film of the Apollo 11 mission was produced as a report film by the Manned Spacecraft Center and is not for general public distribution. This was an unedited video, and what's very interesting is one of the scenes in this unedited video shows the astronauts in the space module and so on. And so after something is said, then 4 seconds later, to make the delay, all of a sudden there's this superimposed voice in the sound that says talk. Again, you have to watch the video to understand what I'm talking about. But Bart Sobrell, investigative journalist, had requested information from NASA. And this unedited documentary of the moon landings came to him, and this video was obviously pre-recorded scenes of the moon trip. July 18, 19, and 20 of 1969. The dates are on the video. It's very interesting. The time on the unedited video on July 20th said that they were still halfway to the moon. They're 130,000 miles from the moon. They're still halfway, and by that evening, they were on the moon. I think it was pre-edited. It was pre-filmed before they got to the moon. They did not travel in a few hours 130,000 miles. Unless that was better rockets than we realized. Think about the temperature on the moon. This is actually hilarious. The moon has a two-week day and a two-week night. So we have a 24-hour cycle. The moon has a two-week day and a two-week night because it has slower rotation around than the Earth. The surface temperature on the moon dramatically changes between the lunar midday and lunar midnight. The middle of the 2 weeks where the sun is shining on the sun side of the moon, it reaches 243 degrees Fahrenheit. Think about that. How would you like to walk on the moon 243 degrees? We thought it was hot with 100 degrees, right? So how did they walk on the moon at 243 degrees Fahrenheit? Well, it's their spacesuit. The lunar midnight is 279 degrees below zero, the dark side of the moon. The astronauts, as NASA claims, landed on the sunny side of the moon, yet the astronauts and NASA speak of outer space being uncomfortably cold. That's the official narrative of NASA. It was so cold, we couldn't get warm in the module and everything. At 243 degrees Fahrenheit, something's not matching up there with their narrative. Traveling closer to the sun, it gets colder. That's not matching up there. Something else about the temperature. Consider the temperature of space modules on the moon, 243 degrees temperature Fahrenheit, and it's unbearably hot. Impossible to sustain life, right? There's no way we could live in 243 degrees without some protection. So, Brother Dave, I want you to think about this. What about the AC units? How much power and coolant would be required to bring temperatures inside the module even down to 100 degrees? 243 degrees Fahrenheit down to 100 degrees, and we would even say 100 degrees is hot. Think about that. The power source on the moon were batteries. Oh, we're talking about all these electric cars and stuff today. 1969 technology. All these batteries, that was enough power for 24 hours on the moon and cooling temperatures from 250 degrees to a livable temperature. My math is not adding up here somewhere along the way. The heat on the moon is more intense than on the Earth. The sun's rays are not diffused like they are on the Earth's surface. So you think about the heat that they had to endure. Not only that, but Apollo 17, if I remember right, was on the surface of the moon for like 22 hours. So how did they do that? How did they have enough power to do that? Yeah, but preacher, how did they keep it all secret? Oh, that's an interesting thing. How many of you ever heard the term Apollo Simulation Project? That's this whole process. They had a project in name of Apollo Simulation Project. It was created in 1961. It was operated by the Defense Intelligence Agency. There's the key right there. This was a defense operative. Total secrecy project similar to the Manhattan Project. How many of you have ever heard of the Manhattan Project? All right. This is the project in which they developed the nuclear bomb and so on. Well, the Manhattan Project employed 130,000 people. They had security techniques, personnel manipulation and so on. As soon as somebody was getting used to the system, the project would be moved somewhere else and so on. So they moved it all over the place. So how did they keep this secret from almost 130,000 people? How did they keep that secret? All right, so it's the same thing as with the Apollo Simulation Project. There was a base near Mercury, Nevada. It was constructed by Atomic Energy Commission. And it was surrounded by other military bases. Houston's Mission Control's spacecraft center were only satellite centers. They did not have exact information themselves. They were only given fed in information. They were given fed in videos and so on. The whole pre-simulated project was controlled from one IBM 370C computer, according to what I read, with pre-recorded tapes, radio data, TV pictures, and so on. Let me give you an example today. This is exactly what they're doing with the mainstream media news. What I think is very interesting, I've not tried this because I don't watch TV. We don't really get many TV channels. But from what I'm told is that in the evening news, as an example, you can turn through all the different major networks and you go from one station, one channel to another. And as you go through all the news, you can almost pick up the story where you just left it on the last channel. Because it's all the same stuff. The CIA is feeding in all this information as to what's to be reported on the news. That's the same type of thing that they did with the moon simulation. Now, what about the astronauts? We are told that 12 men have walked on the moon since 1969. In fact, Al Shepard played golf on the moon, the Apollo 14 mission. This is very interesting as far as Neil Armstrong is concerned. Neil Armstrong is said to be the first, Apollo 11, but he never gave an on-camera interview. Now think about this. Let's stop and think for once, all right? As Americans, we don't have to think anymore, right? Think about this. You are the first man to walk on the moon, and you refuse to give an on-camera interview. If if I was the first man on the moon in real, for real, yeah, I remember, this was amazing. I was like, isn't that exactly what, yeah, I had the Super Bowl touchdown. We won the game. They're excited about proclaiming what they did. Not one time. Not one time. Neil Armstrong never wanted to give an on-camera interview after being the first to walk on the moon. That raises a lot of questions in my mind. This is very interesting. The 25th anniversary celebration at the White House, 25th anniversary of them walking on the moon, supposedly. There was a rare public appearance for Armstrong at this celebration at the White House. Listen to what he said. You remember the term cryptic? Things that are cryptic? Listen to this statement. Today, we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you, we say, we've only completed the beginning. We leave you much that is undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can, listen to this statement, remove one of truth's protective layers. Here's supposedly the first one who's walked on the moon, and that's all he has to say about walking on the moon. This is something else that's interesting. NASA's highest ranking official, James Webb. He oversaw all of the Mercury and Gemini flights in the atmosphere around the Earth. He resigned without explanation just 10 weeks before the Apollo 8 mission was scheduled for launch. All three of Apollo 11 astronauts resigned shortly after walking on the moon. I watched this video. In that video, they have a scene, the official interview with the press after their moon landing. It shows Neil Armstrong, Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins. And as they're sitting there, they have teleprompters to tell them what they're supposed to say. Not only that, but they look like they're at their mom's funeral. Supposedly, they just walked on the moon. And they're just sitting at this table, three of them. Look for the picture. Look for the video. They're just sitting there. It's like, so then they have contradicting statements and so on. But they look like they are at a funeral, not celebrating. This is very also interesting, something I came across. The book Return to Earth, 1973, written by Buzz Aldrin. He talks about 2 years after his moon mission. Buzz Aldrin was asked at a banquet in Lancaster, California, why not tell us how it really felt to be on the moon? Well, 2 years after this, obviously they haven't really told specifically what it's like to be on the moon, if they're asking that question. Why not tell us how it really felt to be on the moon? Here's his response. If any one question was anathema to me, that was it. My throat went dry and I got dizzy. Later, he bolted from the room, shaking uncontrollably. To talk about something, talk about him walking on the moon? That was 2 years after. It seems like, it sounds like anyway, the conscience was bothering them. What about the spacesuits? All right, think about the Michelin Man. Remember the Michelin Man? I don't know if he's still on or not, but I remember when we were driving through Hampton, Iowa, when I was probably a young teenager, if I remember right. As we were driving through Hampton, Iowa, all of a sudden we go by this Michelin tire store. There's the Michelin Man standing out in front. So I rolled down the window. Hey, the Michelin Man! He's looking at me like, but think about the Michelin Man. All right, so this, as we think about these suits, these space suits that these astronauts had to wear, they would have needed 52.3 pounds of water to cool themselves on the moon. I know, it's light, you know, less gravity, and all, so it's lighter weight. But they were supposedly had to carry 52.3 pounds, 23.78 liters of water on the moon. 100 grams, as they estimate this, 100 grams of water per minute would spew out of the blowhole on their suit. I don't remember anyone ever talking about the blowholes on their spacesuits. There's no comments about, there she blows, to keep their suits cool. None of that. Now, here's one of the biggest miracles that took place in 1969. The Van Allen radiation belts. They were discovered by James Van Allen, and he made statements like this that he had to alter later because of the scenario and the narrative that they were trying to develop. But James Van Allen said this about the radiation belts around the Earth. They're 100 times more radioactive than a lethal dosis. A dose, I should say. 100 times more radioactive than a lethal dose. Did you hear what I just said? What's a lethal dose? Something that'll kill you, right? 100 times more radioactive. Also, he made this statement, 1,000 times more lethal than expected. It's more complex and lethal than was known at the time of the Apollo missions. Literally, radiation belts, Van Allen radiation belts, 39,000 miles of intense radiation. The International Space Station astronauts remain well below the inner belt, 250 miles above the Earth. But the space shuttle crew Discovery in February 1997 reported seeing shooting stars when they closed their eyes. What happened? They got too close to the radiation belts. So had their eyes closed, they're seeing shooting stars because of the radiation that they were experiencing. This is humorous. Apollo astronaut Alan Beam was asked whether or not they dealt with the radiation belts. He said that they did not experience trouble with the Van Allen belts because they were not discovered yet. Say what? CNN reporter, the radiation belts surrounding Earth are more dangerous than previously believed. Than the Apollo missions decades before? The National Research Council is a private scientific think tank that submits recommendations to NASA. Listen to this statement. Radiation beyond Earth orbit is so dangerous that returning to the moon is deemed impossible until the necessary technology is developed to protect astronauts from this lethal radiation. Why not use the 1969 technology if we went to the moon? Some things are not adding up. Then we have the mysterious deaths of several astronauts. Colonel James Irwin, this is similar to the list that they have for the Clintons, you know? All these dozens of people that have committed suicide related to the Clintons. The death list. There's two more out here recently, by the way. Colonel James Irwin lived from 1930 to 1991. He was a pilot for Apollo lunar module, Apollo 15, in 1971. He actually began an evangelical ministry. He was a believer. After resigning from NASA, he was a creationist and so on. Also, he's known for 1973 to the late 1980s, going searching for Noah's Ark. I mean, he was doing some of these kinds of things as a creationist. When he died on August 8, 1991, he had a scheduled appointment on that day with Bill Kaysing, name I mentioned earlier. James Irwin was planning to tell him some important information about the Apollo missions. Just out of coincidence, he suffered a fatal heart attack that very day. That's interesting. 8 astronauts died in 1967 before anyone went to the moon. 7 in 6 different air crashes, 1 also in a car accident. These astronauts were some of the best pilots in the world. 11 total astronauts died in accidents the 3 years before the first manned Apollo flight cleared the launching pad. People were dying right and left. There's a very important reason for that. Also in relation to some of this, NASA mission quality inspector Thomas Barron with North American Aviation, Congress had called him to give a report related to that report of information he was requested to give. His employment was terminated days before the Apollo 1 fire that I mentioned in a moment here experienced a fatal accident. Very interesting. Apollo 1, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Apollo 1 fire before. Apollo 1, on January 27, 1967, there was an accident when Virgil Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee died in a fire in a moon module. Did not even get off the Earth. Gus Grissom actually would have been the first man on the moon if he had not died in this fire. One thing you need to know about astronaut Gus Grissom is he was outspokenly critical of the NASA program as a NASA astronaut. And he even took a photo of an Apollo 1 module with a lemon attached. He was not popular with NASA. He had a list of some 500 different things that needed to be fixed before they were ever going to get to the moon. 2 days before the fire, several CIA agents were granted access to the launch pad. That should tell you something right there. Roger Chaffee's widow said that the door was changed just days before the fire. Instead of the module door opening out, it was changed to open within so that there was no quick access, or quick escape, I should say. Also, it's very interesting, a pile of rags soaked in a flammable liquid was found under Gus Grissom's seat. Literally, the fire occurred without igniting the engines of the rocket. They intensified the oxygen within the module and became an oxygen bomb. Betty Grissom and her son Scott is a 747 pilot, they were absolutely convinced that the fire was set deliberately to kill witnesses of the NASA program. If they're really going to the moon, then why are they doing all of this? Also, it's very interesting, Grissom was writing an extensive report on problems with the Apollo project, and he planned to give it to his U.S. senator just before this fire took place. CIA agents arrived at the Grissom home minutes after his death and illegally confiscated that report. Gus Grissom's wife had not even been told he was dead yet. How many of you ever heard that information? Grissom's wife finally hears that, and they begin pursuing lawsuits and so on. But what's very interesting, to honor the three astronauts, there was an attempt made to bury the capsule at sea before an investigation. Why? Last we knew, from what I've read, the capsule has been in storage at NASA Research Center near the CIA headquarters. Very interesting. Think about something here with me. Again, I'm asking for us to think. The greatest event of the 20th century, NASA sending men to the moon. But the plans for the rover, the LEM module, the large engines which powered Apollo spacecraft are missing. They were deliberately destroyed. So we have the greatest event supposedly in history, and they destroy all the plans instead of reusing them. Something's fishy there. President Bush in 2003 said this: "The United States will return to the moon as a logical first step to Mars and beyond." I thought we'd been to the moon 6 times. How is that the first step, returning to the moon? Bush said this then also: "We will put a man on the moon by 2020. Well, that didn't happen. What about the 1960s and early 1970s, supposedly going several times? NASA said this in 2019: "We'll return to the moon by 2024. An independent scientific government panel said that NASA was so far behind schedule to reach the moon that they estimated the moonwalk would not happen before 2035. President Obama in 2010 said this: "How do we shield astronauts from radiation on longer missions? Why not do what we did in 1969 and later?" 2014, December. NASA sent Orion spacecraft unmanned into the Van Allen radiation belts that I mentioned earlier, 39,000 miles. They brought it back for study to test the instruments. Bart Sobrell found out that there were 2 Geiger counters that they were checking to measure radiation in the Van Allen belts. Here's the official spokesperson for this, Kelly Smith, a NASA engineer. And there's a couple statements that are very interesting in the official report from Kelly Smith. First of all, dangerous radiation, he mentions. And also it says we must solve these radiation challenges before we send people through this region of space. I thought we did it several times before in 1969, the early 1970s. We must solve these, but they weren't discovered yet then. Why not use the Apollo plans if they went through this radiation belt in 1969? To give you a perspective of these radiation belts, I read that radiation from an X-ray machine is only 1/5,000th the radiation of the Van Allen belts. And they protect people from radiation machines. Bart Sobrell, Moon Man, page 11, says this about NASA's claim. On the very first attempt, and all with 1/1,000,000th the computing power of a cell phone, they have been able to send astronauts to orbit and land on the surface of the moon, a distance that is 1,000 times farther than that they can achieve with human space flight today. That, to me, sounds miraculous, right? All these miracles to deceive the multitudes. The moon's orbit, on average, is 238,000 miles from Earth. And yet the Soviet Union had technical supremacy over America in the 1960s, but they never sent a man to the moon in the last 50 years. Something's not measuring up. The first attempt, we are told, they went to the moon. The 747 had 160 failed engine designs before it could finally fly. The Apollo 11 mission succeeded on their very first attempt. NASA deliberately destroyed the hundreds of billions of dollars worth of hardware to dispose of all the evidence of their deception, end quote. Rocket designer Wernher von Braun, by the way, was a World War II Nazi SS officer that was brought to America. Von Braun was in the 1960s, and he established the likelihood of a successful first attempt manned lunar mission at 1 in 10,000 chance. He estimated the rockets to go to the moon would be taller than the Empire State Building and weigh 800,000 tons. They didn't, by the way. Thousands of micrometeorites per hour, he said, traveling at speeds greater than 20,000 miles per hour would be a major challenge as these meteorites hit the moon. But they survived all those things. Sounds miraculous. Let me emphasize strong delusion. I believe in America today, we are at a point where we believe everything our government tells us. You know, all of this stuff has been setting us up for wear your mask. Get your vaccine. Believe everything the government says. We won't lie to you. I submit that maybe they have been more than telling us the truth. Lord, I pray that you'd help us to be discerning in these last days. Lord, the Bible emphasizes strong delusion because they don't believe or don't want to believe the truth. But help us to believe thy truth, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.